the stoppage time.
All right, here we go. Hello, ladies and gents. Today on the show, we have a man who's been there and seen it all at Forest over the last 20 years. He's presenter Match Day and Match Night on BBC Radio Nottingham, West Bridgeford resident himself, and a voice you'll instantly recognise from Saturday afternoons, Mr. Robin Chipperfield. Robin, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us at Forest Fancast.
No problem, Tom. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very well. Here from New York. And as you know, we're a podcast made by Forest fans in North America. And we've got numerous supporters group across the US and Canada as well. Lots of games together. We've got LA, Chicago, Toronto, and of course, the one in New York City, which is mine. So my first question to you, Robin, is what's your experience of the Forest brand around the world?
Well, I was going to ask you that, actually, because I was going to talk about how, because I'm always amazed by how worldwide Forest is. And I've always assumed that's because of the European days and the kind of the word spread around the world about Forest success and obviously winning the European Cup twice. But or do you think it's more about expats, you know, British people moving around the world who are Forest fans, maybe from Nottingham or around, and who then spread the word around the world that way?
Well, I'd like to think that as well. From my experience, I think it's both. I think obviously, right. You know, the heydays of the European Cups took Forest on a world level. People were watching it worldwide. People know about them. And everyone knows Brian Clough from that, which is great. But I've also found more recently, I've spoke to people that have come into the New York bar to watch the games with us. I said, well, how did you get into Forest? You know, the Americans or Canadians. And they're like, oh, actually, you know, I was playing FIFA. And I just picked the team because I like the logo, and then they're becoming my team. Yeah,
I think the name helps because it's not United, it's not City, it's not town. It's something different. It's something unique as well. So I like that. So how many in? I know you can probably only talk from a New York perspective, a New York perspective. But how many would get together in New York to watch a typical game at a regular time?
Really varies. So, you know, Saturdays is 10 o'clock, which we meet there. Last weekend, we had about 25 people in, which was great. That was a big number. We had a lot of tourists because, you know, it's Christmas in New York, so people are coming over.
Yeah.
But it's brilliant because we get to chat to people that come from Nottingham and they can't believe that there's Forest fans that get together in New York. And they love coming, you know, come to join us here. And I think that's just such a brilliant thing that a club like Forest can do.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's not many that would do that. I mean, you probably take it for granted because you're from Nottingham and it's your club. But I wonder, you know, in reality, would there be another 20 English clubs that would do that? I would doubt it.
I doubt too. You know, we get some in the same bar that we see. Chelsea fans, West Ham fans, Man U fans, of course. But there's, you know, the smaller clubs you don't really see. So it makes you really proud to be a Forest fan.
Yeah, good.
It really, really does. So thanks for joining us today, mate. You know, it's been a while since we spoke.
Sorry, I can't get out of the habit of asking questions, can I? Sorry.
You're on the other end of the mic today.
Yeah, I know. It's difficult. I'm not used to this position.
So you began your career at BBC Nottingham, back in 1999, right? 20 years ago.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Was it Ron Atkinson or David Platt that was manager?
David Platt was my first Forest manager. Back in the day, which is quite a, you know, I mean, he was a big, people forget because, you know, he didn't achieve great success with Forest, didn't get them back into the Premier League, which was obviously the aim. But people forget how big a name he was at the time. And I remember coming up in the summer of 99 when he'd been announced, thinking, blimey, this is big. This is huge, actually.
Really?
He was a huge name in English football at the time, and obviously seen as one of the more intelligent English footballers, had been to play in Italy, and you know, was quite a thinker, I think, was the impression at the time about the game. So, you know, I came up there thinking, blimey, this is huge. But I always remember before I came up, I explained to I won't say who, but it was a guy I was covering Southend at the time, this was my team.
Okay.
And I said to the guy at the time, I said, really looking forward to going up next week to, you know, start my new job and everything. And David Platt's obviously been appointed and that looks good. He went, well, he won't be a success. And he was kind of a dour Yorkshireman, which is probably giving it away a bit. But it kind of it made me think, oh, right, why not? No, you need experience in the Championship. You need somebody who's been there and done it or knows his way around. And I always kind of bore that in mind. And I think it's a... Whether it's still the case these days, 20 years on, I'm not so sure, because we see Lamouchi having success. We saw Daniel Farke having success at Norwich, and David Wagner at Huddersfield, and, you know, whoever else. And, you know, you have your horses for courses, Championship managers, but then now and again you get a little sprinkling of something different, and it and that can work too. So
yeah, doesn't seem like...
Sorry, what was the question to start with?
Doesn't seem like there was a formula for it, but my question was really, that's coming up, is could anyone have imagined back then, you know, that Forest, it would be 20 years since they've been out of the Premier League, because obviously the expectation was on that they'd go straight back up.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't think they'd go straight back up. I thought they'd go back up second season once David Platt had learned a bit more about the Championship and got used to managing in the Championship. They still have the parachute money at that time, and they still had a strong squad, but it, you know, obviously it didn't happen, and
we're still waiting.
Still waiting, and, you know, just grateful to be out of League One after those few seasons in League One. So
we're going to get to that in a little while. Now, you know, in your time, you've seen 17 managers, is it, since Ron Atkinson departed the club? Okay.
Plus caretakers, I would think.
I didn't even include them in my...
A few of them.
So which of those managers do you think would have been most successful had they not been sacked and given more time? Which do you think, you know what, they'd have stuck around a bit longer, given a chance?
The obvious one for me is Sean O'Driscoll.
Yes.
That's the one that immediately comes to mind. Some of them just kind of... It just felt like, I mean, say Steve McLaren.
Right.
It was only there, what, a month or two? No, yeah. A bit longer than that.
Big announcement at the time, though, wasn't
it? Big announcement and everything. And it just, that never felt right from the moment the season kicked off. It just didn't feel right. And the same, to a certain extent, with Alec McLeish as well. Although McLeish has had success at other clubs, and there was, you know, all sorts going on in the background at the club at the time.
Yes.
But Sean O'Driscoll was the one that readily springs to mind as somebody who I think had laid a decent platform on a lowish budget in the Championship. And I think given time, and it might have been the following season, I think he would have achieved something at the club. And, you know, he played, without wishing to, he played the Forest way, really. I didn't want to use that phrase.
No, he did. And no one wanted him to leave. Everyone was shocked, because it was the players that kind of assigned him, really, wasn't it? I remember reading that someone went round and asked and said, who do you want to be the manager? You know,
yeah, because in the summer, I was about to say not Dougie Friedman, Steve Cotterill had gone. And it was deemed that O'Driscoll had quite an impact when he came in as a coach assistant manager in, I think, probably January, February the year before. And he'd made quite a difference to keep Forest in the Championship, but the players quite fancied the idea of O'Driscoll doing it full-time. And Forest had seen his sides, you know, his Doncaster side, perform at the City Ground at League One and at the Championship level. Seeing the way they play, they had good players and played the right way. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but, you know, there's quite a few decisions and managers down the years that we've thought, yeah, that seems a good idea at the time.
Yeah, I completely agree. And my next question is, you know, I'm speaking, when I was a Forest fan at first, I was about 7 years old. That's when he used to go down, 94-95 season, when we finished third in the Premier League. So that was my introduction to Forest, you know.
Yeah.
And it's been not very many ups since then. So every year we always think, this is our year, this is going to be at Forest, we're going to promotions to the Premier League. What's the closest you've actually thought, you know what, actually, they're going to just do it this time?
Paul Hart, I think, probably when Paul Hart was the manager. And they had the kind of the rebuilt team, if you like, the young team that went to Sheffield United second leg.
Yes. Heartbreak.
I know, it was horrendous. It was truly horrendous. It probably remains the greatest game I've ever seen.
Really?
There have obviously been dramas in playoffs generally, but that one was given everything that was on the line and the, you know, the close proximity of the game only being an hour up the motorway, and it was Warnock against Hart, you know, contrast in styles, given how much was at stake, and, you know, especially afterwards, not perhaps knowing as much at the time, but that, you know, the players, that squad kind of drifted away a little bit. Players were sold and not too many came in. So that was a huge moment for the club looking back. And I go back to a, you know, Forest went 2-0 up, if you remember. So they were within touching distance of Wembley. 2-0 up, and there's a deflected Michael Brown shot, I think, that goes in. And you think, well, that deflection could have gone anywhere. And immediately after Forest had gone 2-0 up, that goes in, and you just think, if that deflection had gone wide, the history of the club could have been so, so different.
Could have been so different. Oh my God. You mentioned Wembley, because I remember reading something quite recently. It said, you know, Forest are only one of three teams that haven't played at the new Wembley yet.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's quite depressing. Just put into that perspective, you think, bloody hell, has it really been that long?
And just to give you an idea, I think Notts County, who obviously slipped out of the league last May, but I think they were one of the other two. So that's what covering Nottingham Sports been like for the last few years.
Depressing. It's been depressing. Yeah. But, you know, the feel-good factor's coming back. I'm going to get onto that question secondly. But my next question for you, Robin, is something that some of the fans in the Forest Supporters Club of New York have put towards me and wanted to know. And this one goes back to Billy Davis in his second tenure.
I knew what the two words coming up were, Billy and Davis.
Near comment. And, you know, he declared a blackout against the press, BBC Radio Nottingham. What do you think was his reason behind it? You know, was it tactical? Was it a personal agenda? You know, was it to assert his authority? Or do you think that he was genuinely paranoid?
Well, first thing to say, and I will always put this on the record.
Go for it.
He's a very, very good manager.
Agreed. Oh, the results show it, don't they?
The result absolutely show it. And the whole time was really odd. The first time he was fantastic to deal with. Really good. Yeah. We got on really well. If he had a problem with me, he never talked about it. I certainly didn't have a problem with him. He was good to deal with. And I would not. So when he came back second time, I thought, well, that'll be okay. That'll be fine.
I have returned. I remember the video.
Yeah.
The propaganda.
It was just really strange. It was a really strange time to cover the club because, you know, if he had a problem with me or the radio station, fair enough. But then he also had a problem with the Nottingham Post and with ITV and with lots of national newspapers, and I think with Sky and Five Live for a time. You know, all I'm saying is if you have a problem with me, that's fine, but you can't surely have a problem with everybody. So it just seemed a very, very odd time, and not a time I would look back on with any fondness whatsoever second time around.
You must have been relieved, you know, in a sense when he was sacked the second time. And you thought, well, okay, you know, a new era can start and we can get around this gloom that's been surrounding it. Because, you know, football should be fun. It's there to be enjoyed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head, because it should be fun. It should, you know, my job should be fun most of the time. There's going to be times when it's difficult or pressured or you get sick or whatever. But 90% of the time, it should be fun. And 90% of the time, at that point, it wasn't fun. And it should be enjoyable. You know, most people in football are good to deal with. You come across people who you'd rather not deal with, but you have to deal with at times. That's fine. Yeah. But most of the time, it should be fun. And it just made the job so difficult, because you'd want to build up to a match against, I don't know, Watford or whoever it might be at the time, Sheffield United, and you couldn't hear from, you couldn't bring the fans, the views of the manager or any players as part of the programme. And, that's not fun, really. It's not fun for anybody.
As well, no. It makes your job harder.
Makes my job harder, but more importantly, the people that pay the money to go and watch games on the way to the game can't hear from the man that's in charge of their club, and that was sad, really.
It was a strange old time, because, you know, we had the, what I now look back as propaganda, which was on, it was at BBC, you know, on the news, where they had, you know, Billy Davis's DVD room.
Yeah, I'm not going to go down that route. I'm not going to. I think politically, that's a difficult road for me to go down.
No, that's fine. No, it was just as fans, I was talking to some of the lads in it about New York, and yeah, thinking, wow, it was an intense period. But another question we've got. Okay, I'm going to tactically change.
Hey guys, before we do that. Can I just chime in? Hello, Chippers. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing? I don't know who you are, but somebody's popped up on my screen.
I get that a lot. Don't worry about it. I would say my name's Mark Turner. I'm one of the regular co-hosts on Forest Fancast.
Hi, Mark.
Hello. And it's really awesome to talk to you because you're one of those guys like Jacko and like Colin Frey, who, you know, obviously we've listened to for a lot of years now. So, can't believe I am talking to the legendary Chippers. So very cool.
It's very straightforward. Don't worry about it.
You seem very down to earth. So that's good. But the Billy Davis thing, I have to say, I heard Colin Frey the other day. I think it was on Reservoir Red Dogs.
Okay.
Yeah. Talking with Matt Ford and his assessment of that situation mirrored yours. But he even went further as to say, I guess they exchanged cell phone numbers or mobile numbers, as you call them in England. And, you know, they had exchanged texts and whatnot. And I guess Billy Davis had, you know, texted Colin Frey to say, looking forward to working with you again prior to arriving at the City Ground that second time around. Yeah. And then, of course, the wall went up and that was that. So very, very odd. But
Odd time.
Yeah, for sure.
It's very difficult to kind of to get past that time because that's obviously a lot of what people want to talk about. But, you know, I don't know how long it lasted in the end. A year? You might remember long. Better than me. It wasn't that long. So.
I have to say, when you were recounting the Sheffield United game, I actually threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Yeah.
have you been listening silently since then, Mark?
From that part there, yeah.
That's where you joined.
I was waiting for the intro, Tom. So
I was looking at something else on my screen. I wasn't looking at. I didn't realize you joined. I was like, oh, hello, Mark's here.
No problem.
So are you in New York as well, Mark?
No, I'm actually. So I live in Austin, Texas, as you can tell from the accent.
I really can't.
But for many, many years, I lived in Colorado, and I'm actually back in Colorado today on business. So I'm talking to you from Denver.
Right. Okay. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Amazing. New York, Denver, and Westbridge. Fantastic.
It's not what you always see on on those Gamma posters, right? Paris, New York, Denver, Westbridge, right?
So. Yeah. They're the three. They're the top three.
Fantastic. Robin, we're going to get to, you know, from the bad times of Forest, you know, we're going to switch it around a bit. And there's a real feel-good factor around Forest now. You know, a new owner, chairman, and obviously Lamucci doing so well. And, you know, the club seems to be such great shape on and off the field. You know, we've got Yates signing a new contract this morning, Matty Cash signing again. Does it feel any different to you this season working around Forest, interacting with the players? And if so, why? Why does it feel different?
I have to be honest, it doesn't feel a lot different from last season. I think they're perhaps a more solid side than they were last season on the pitch. And they seem very much as a squad, very united. So I would say the squad looks more together than last season. Not that there were massive problems last season. I wouldn't want to give that impression, but they seem more together this season. But what I would say is that about this time last season, I didn't think there were going to be major issues last season. It turned out, you know, for most of December and into the new year, there obviously were major issues which led to Aitor Karanka going. But I remember about this time last year seeing Forest go and win at Hull comfortably, away from home at Bolton comfortably, sort of thing that Forest don't do, go away from home and win comfortably.
Yeah.
But they were doing that at this, or just before this point last year, and they've done it at this point again this year. So I think it feels largely similar, but I think there are more, maybe the foundations are a bit more, the roots are a bit stronger than they were last year. Let's put it like that.
Okay, that's great. And that kind of leads me on to another question that I was asked to feel, you know, I was fielding some questions after I said I'm going to speak to Chippers. And people wanted to know, you know, what can you tell us about the Karanka fallout and also what led to later on Roy Keane leaving and then O'Neill was fired. When Lamucci was brought in, what, 20 minutes later he was announced?
So. Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of...
Wait, hang on a second. Martin O'Neill's gone.
Yeah. It was hugely uncontroversial. Nobody really batted an eyelid at the time. That was quite a difficult period, actually. Neil time, because you know there was, I wouldn't like to guess the percentage based on social media, but there was a large chunk who were not having him as a manager from the beginning.
Yeah.
At the City Ground, and then there was a chunk that were equally wanting to defend him at every opportunity. And if you said anything that could be construed as critical, then the world would fall in from a great height. But if you said anything that would praise him, that the world would equally fall in from a great height. So that was a Chippers, an interesting
time as well. Sure, Chippers, I'm not sure you understand how social media works.
Yeah, you'd think I'd know by now, wouldn't you? It was amazing. It was amazing. And I'd not experienced anything like that, because generally the feelings are, you know, towards a manager, you get a large level of support or a large level of criticism, and you're not surprised by it. But I was surprised by the both sides, actually, how willing people were to defend and also how willing to attack as well, given his CV.
When we talk about Lamucci and what's going on presently, I'm trying to remember, when was the last time we had a manager at Nottingham Forest who deflected the advances of another team, particularly one from the Premier League, as Lamucci has apparently done this week, by some accounts, twice, from Watford?
Yeah.
When was the last time a Forest manager was wanted by another team? Why was it Forest?
Absolutely. That was Forest, my question. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Billy Davis first time around, wasn't there, and other clubs and Glasgow Rangers and everything. Whether how much there was in that, I don't know. But there was the Paul Hart and Leeds scenario.
Oh, that's right.
How long ago would that have been? Maybe 15 years ago. But it's been a long time since there's been that kind of rumbling around that a Forest manager might be interesting other clubs. But I think part of that is because Lamucci was largely unknown as a manager in this country. I mean, you know, there are obviously some people who follow European football more closely than I do and world football more closely than I do, who knew who he was. But, you know, he was a relatively unknown when he came in to replace Martin O'Neill. But I think I mentioned this on our own podcast this week, but the reason I think he's attracted that attention is because, one, he comes in with a clean sheet of paper because nobody has preconceived ideas about his style of football, what he can achieve, what he's like to deal with, etc. But also the way that his teams play and the way they look so organised, and he's got them so organised this season. I think it's that attracts Premier League teams.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as well that the team right now as a whole, I mean, that seems to be kind of a watermark of this team, which is that you've got a manager who's largely unknown. You've got maybe as much as, I don't know, half the squad, perhaps even more, who are not a particularly well-known quantity. You know, we talked on the Forest Fancast about Bruce Samba, who's one of our favourites. I think every Forest fan's favourite.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how on earth, you know, where did he come from? I mean, surely he was being created in a lab, because...
remember how much stick there was for the signing? I don't know if you do remember, but at the time, why do we need another goalkeeper? Is he signing another goalkeeper? Well, as it turns out, he's signing another goalkeeper because this one's better than all the ones he's got.
Put together, potentially. But you know, you look at Sam Basso, you look at Rafa Mir. Oh, no, sorry. Moving on.
Yeah, but these are Forest are shopping in that market now, and you know they have upgraded from the previous time they shopped in a continental supermarket, if you like, hypermarket. They've gone for a better class of player, you know, a better class of European player, and it makes a heck of a difference. And I think it makes a heck of a difference to the players, the British players, if you like, the players that were there already. They see these players coming in and think, blimey, we are going up a level. And that's what Forest undoubtedly have done.
When you're talking about Forest's previous continental forays, you're surely not referring to the Italian job, are you, Chippers?
And what, the David Platt Italian job? I was referring to the Montagnier era, if you like, where you know, Dumitru and people like that came in and for one reason or another, failed to impress?
Well, to use American sports vernacular for a moment, the batting average this year in terms of transfers is remarkable. I mean, just about every player has shown their mettle. Just about every player has contributed to one degree or another. And that's astonishing. And I know that doesn't all fall on the shoulders of Lamucci. I know that now we have a team who I guess were actually pretty instrumental in bringing him to the club to begin with. But I know that this team have found this talent, and it's a great place for us to be.
Yeah. And you know, even if Lamucci hasn't found it, and I don't know how much, you know, he's had to say, I mean, he's worked with Brice Samba before, so you would imagine he had a fair bit to do with certainly that recommendation, if not that signing.
Yeah.
But it's all very well signing these players and spotting the talent, but you also have to mould them into a team and bring the personalities together. And I think, you know, as well as the organisation of the team, the fact that he's brought the team, the squad together, to be united and all on one page, and to be able to cope with not being in the team perhaps one week and dropping out of the squad and then coming back on the bench and then being back in the team. The way he's managed to keep that going, I think, is something that is hugely beneficial to the club, and shows him in a very good light as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I was reading yesterday that, you know, he's not too worried about not having his, you know, his contract runs out at the end of the season. Is that right?
Mm, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And he's confident that he's probably going to stay, right?
Yeah, I think he's very... I mean, he's a very relaxed guy. I mean, what you see maybe on TV or here on the radio or when you listen to him is him. He's very relaxed. He doesn't get too involved in the drama of football, if you like.
Which there's too much of, you know.
There's absolutely too much of. Yeah, and he's fine with all that. He's not concerned by much of that. He just, you know, gets on with his job to train the players, to make them better, and, you know, potentially, as we all hope, to win matches. And so far, so good.
Absolutely. So it kind of brings me on to my next question, Robin, about talking about players. Your knowledge is phenomenal, as I've just, you know, listened to you over the last...
My memory isn't.
No, it really is. I'm so impressed by it. And obviously, you've been at Forest. Is it 19 seasons, 20 seasons now?
Since August 99.
Bloody hell, it's 20, if my maths is right. I want to Robin.
Feels more.
who are some of the best players you've seen in your time at the City Ground? Who really stands out in all that time?
That's difficult, because obviously you get to know them to a limited extent. You get to know them. So I look back at that Billy first team, the first Billy team.
Right.
And, you know, they were such good people to deal with. So Camping Gold, Chambers, Gunter, Wes Morgan. You go through the team, McKenna, Anderson, Earnshaw. You know, that team, people pick me up on others I've missed out, but that team was fantastic to deal with. All good people. And I still, you know, you still see them at games or, you know, generally around the place. You still keep in touch with them because they were just really good people, as well as being obviously very, very good players as well. So that makes it more difficult for me to pick out exceptional players. But you have your favourite, a bit like supporters. You have your favourites for different reasons. They might not be the best players, you know, in terms of quality or technique or anything, but you just have your favourite.
If you could choose a player that embodies Forest the way that Stuart Pearce did for me in my generation, yeah, he was Forest, and still is Forest. In my head, he just encapsulates that. If you could choose anyone over your time there who encapsulates that spirit, who would you choose?
That's a question. Probably someone like Worrell, I think, at the moment.
Yeah.
I like the idea that there are three or four that kind of come through the academy and are part of it. I think that, one, it saves the club an awful lot of money, but two, it just gives the team, you know, does Joe Worrell know what it means to win on a Saturday for Forest? And you just have the faith that he's giving everything to get his team over the line. So I think I'd probably go for Joe Worrell. But there are, you know, going back over the years, there were plenty of others, you know, Chris Cohen, you know, you can't go thundering into tackles these days in the way that Stuart Pearce did, and, you know, a lot of his... aura amongst Forest fans is because of that. You can't really do that these days, so you have to do it in a different way. And I think, you know, Cohen back in that era, who I, of course, should have mentioned earlier when talking about that first Billy Davis team and how good they were to deal with. But Cohen probably embodied everything about that's good about being a Forest player, I think, because, you know, he gave it his absolute maximum all the time. He was decimated, obviously, by injuries at times in his career. Went down into League One, came back up and, came from League, played in League One for Forest, came up and looked a really, really good player. And, you know, but for injury, he might have gone on to play in the Premier League and moved on. But, you know, because of injury, I think he didn't. But, yeah, in a long roundabout way, there's been a few over the last 20 years. I think probably Cohen, Worrell, people like that. Yeah. Michael Dawson.
Yeah,
I like Michael Dawson as well.
I think so. I like the fact you said Worrell as well, because he's putting the Nottingham in Nottingham Forest, and to me that is important.
Yeah. And he's somebody who, you know, he's had quite a bit of stick as well over the previous couple of years before perhaps he went away to Rangers. He's not good enough, blah blah blah. And you know, one thing you've got to give is a bit of time, a bit of patience. You know, players in their first three or four games, they might come off and they might look brilliant in their first three or four games, but you can't make a decision on whether he's a good enough player on the basis of the first three or four games. You have to give, particularly young players, you have to give them time.
Yeah. I have a follow-up question for you, Robbie. Well, a quick observation. So it's interesting what you were saying about getting to know the players a little bit. So when I lived in Colorado Springs specifically, I had the opportunity to do some media work around a podcast and some writing following the Colorado Springs Switchbacks, who play in the USL, which is the tier directly below the MLS. And it's interesting because I have my favorite players as well, and some of them it was based upon ability, but oftentimes you are influenced by those players who make themselves available to you, who give a good interview, and who you just get a sense are good human beings. And I had that.
Yes.
Now, I have a couple of favorites at the Switchbacks who are just really, really good guys, and I just wish them the best. But it's funny, I think it was Fresno or Vancouver? I think maybe it was Fresno from California. We're visiting Colorado Springs for a game, and Robert Earnshaw was actually the assistant coach. And so it was funny, after the game, I was supposed to be going on the field to interview Switchbacks players about the game, but instead... I beelined it to Robert Earnshaw.
Quite right. Now, he's a good guy.
Yeah, and I'd never been that close to a Forest legend. Well, that's not true. I shook Clough's hand. But outside of that, I'd never been that close to a Forest legend. I beelined it to him. I got a little hyperbolic in that I suggested to him, in modern times, he was the best striker we'd seen at the City Ground outside of Stan Collymore. And now that I look back on that... That could be argued. I mean,
probably a slight exaggeration.
Oh, come on. Who else are you going to put in the mix? PVH? Yeah, other than that, I mean, you know, top quality, top draw. Anyway.
The only thing I'd say is he wasn't top division.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. But I put a big smile on his face anyway, and it was good visiting with him. But my follow-up question is this, and we had Paul Taylor on the show a couple of episodes back. Obviously, he's a proper chancer, but we had him on the show.
It's nice to be second choice. Yeah, go on.
We're getting through all of the Nottingham royalty here, Chip, as you can tell. And a question I posed to him was, not who do you think is the best player necessarily on the current squad or necessarily contributing the most, but which player this season so far, which players have surprised you the most? And maybe it's that there are unknown quantities and it's one of the new boys. Maybe it's one of the lads that's been around for a while who you feel has really elevated their game. So same question to you, which player or players this year have really surprised you?
There's one that immediately springs to mind, which is Cash.
Yes.
I always thought he was a good player. I never thought he was a right back. I never, ever thought he was a right back.
I don't think anyone did.
No. It was like, oh, we've got nobody to play right back opening day of the season. Well, we'll play Matty there. He's got a right foot. No, it obviously wasn't like that. And he's been absolutely sensational since then. The other one might be Ben Watson, actually, who... It's probably wrong to say surprise because, you know, he's had a tremendous career. And one of my pet lines in football is that position he plays is always massively underrated. And Ben Watson to a lesser extent, because I always thought he was a really good player. But certainly Matty Cash is the big surprise for me this season.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's a good shout. That's a really good shout.
I think most people would agree. And probably Samba as well, because no one knew anything about him.
Yeah.
And he really has.
Yeah, he's certainly caught the eye and he's a bit of a character, and you know, that's what you want from a goalkeeper. And yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
I think it's Samba in the midst of the Muric situation. I think that's the thing that's made his appearance and his performances so surprising, is that I think everything was hung on Muric, right? As being an international goalkeeper, you know, coming from the current champions, Premier League champions. There was no doubt he was going to be our number one all season long, or for at least as long as the loan went. And of course that made the rise of Brice Samba that much more surprising. Hey gents, unfortunately I'm squeezing this interview in between work commitments. Yeah, I have a day job. So I've got to run, unfortunately.
How boring.
I know, terribly boring. But I know that you guys have more questions, so I'll leave you guys to it. I look forward to hearing the rest of the interview myself. And it's been a pleasure, Chippers, really. I very enjoy visiting with you.
Good man. Thanks, Mark. Nice to meet you.
Cheers, Mark. Thank you. Here we go. It was a nice surprise having Mark pop up, wasn't it?
It's amazing technology, isn't it? Is it not amazing? I know I sound like an old fart now, but it really is amazing.
Not one bit. No, he's a pro. He's good at it, isn't he? He really brings it. Well, I'm going to wrap it up pretty soon as well, Robin.
Okay.
Because I think you've pretty much answered the questions I have. Now, what I did gauge from chatting to some of the New York fans here when I said that I was going to speak to you is that someone said, "Oh, isn't he from Essex?" I said, "Yeah, he's in Essex."
Yeah,
lad.
Yeah. Can't you tell?
Yeah.
Well, I try and hide it.
The accent's not there, thank God.
It certainly is.
No offense to any of our Essex fans listening. But, you know, you have some affinity for Forest now, surely, after all this time. Would you consider yourself a fan? How far would you go as to say you're...
I am a fan. Southend is my team. That's where, you know, I grew up, and that's the team I started to go and watch. It's a bit embarrassing this season, to be honest. They are truly dreadful. But Forest is a team I've covered, like Notts County I've covered, Mansfield I've covered for 20 years in various sizes, in various phases as well. So I have a huge fondness for all of them, and I would say I'm a fan of all of them. If I left and went somewhere else, I would look for Southend first, and then Forest, Notts, Mansfield immediately after that. If you can have, I never thought you could have more than one team, but my God, I've got more than one team.
Mate, that's impressive. And you know, as Forest fans appreciate you, as you can tell by Mark coming on, and it's like he's speaking to the legendary Chippers. You know, you're at court status.
Yeah,
clearly.
I don't get that. I do my job. That's all I do.
You are fantastic at it, mate. And we appreciate.
I'm very lucky to be able to do it, to do what you know, what you enjoy doing. It's not. I've always said that at some point somebody's going to go, "Look, you've had your fun. You've been doing this for 20, 25 years.
Do you want to manage the team?
Go and get." No. You don't want that. But go and get yourself a proper job now, and you know, just plan about. But I'll keep playing about as long as I can, I think.
And what can you see happening after maybe you finish reporting on sports? Would you ever go into, you know, writing or anything like that?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind writing at some point in the future. I always enjoyed writing when I've done bits and pieces, not a lot, but bits and pieces for the BBC Sport website, which I've always enjoyed, actually. I do like writing, so that's a possibility, but not something I've thought a huge amount about. So who knows? Who knows? You know, what future, when there are, you know, so many good podcasts about.
Including ours, absolutely.
Absolutely, including this one. You know, who knows in 10 years' time what the future of radio will be, you know, where we'll be broadcasting, if we'll be broadcasting, you know, anything could happen in the next 10 years. It's anything like the last 10 years. You consider 10 years ago, there wasn't social media. There would have been the internet, I think. But no Netflix, I wouldn't think, you know, stuff like that.
No.
Just didn't happen, you know, no iPlayer, no BBC Sounds, you know. So, you know, what will there be in 10 years' time? Who knows? There's no point really thinking about it, because whatever will be, I think.
Can you tell us where to follow you on Twitter, for those that want to follow you if they're not?
Yes, at SportChippers on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. There we are. I really am a modern man.
There we go. We get pictures of you as well. Lucky us.
Good man.
Brilliant.
Cheers, Tomo.
Mate, thank you very much, and we'll speak soon.